Chapter 12. Other Influenza Adventures. After World War II, influenza researchers contemplated the possibility of rapidly developing a vaccine to protect a population in one region of the world from a virulent strain of pandemic flu that emerged in another region, such as China. However, with increasing passenger plane travel across the Atlantic and even the Pacific, researchers would likely have little time to culture the new pandemic strain in embryonated chicken eggs for a mass-produced vaccine. This proved to be a problem when novel pandemic strains emerged in 1957 and 1968. In April 1957, an influenza researcher named Maurice Hillman at the U.S. Army's Walter Reed Institute of Research obtained a sample of the virus from Hong Kong and sent it to six pharmaceutical companies and instructed them to mass-produce inactivated vaccines from it. Between August and October, these companies delivered about 30 million doses, enough to cover about 17% of the population. However, by then, the number of infections was peaking and prompting widespread cancellation of college football games because so many players were sick. Infection rates rapidly dropped in November before the majority of the 53 million doses were administered. A thorough review of the pandemic response evaluated the role of the vaccine as follows. New outbreaks declined sharply in November, and most terminated by the end of that month. Given the limited amount of vaccine available and the fact that it was not more than 60% effective, it is apparent that the vaccine had no appreciable effect on the trend of the pandemic. Vaccine propagandists, such as Paul Offit, have claimed that the estimated death count, 116,000, from the 1957 flu would have been much higher without Hillman's vaccine. As Smithsonian Magazine put it in a June 2020 article published during the COVID-19 pandemic, yet researchers estimate that a million more Americans would have died if not for the pharmaceutical companies that distributed 40 million doses of Hillman's vaccine that fall. This is an outrageously mendacious piece of vaccine propaganda. On July 17, 1968, the National Influenza Center at the University of Hong Kong announced it had isolated a new influenza, A, H3N2, with pandemic potential. On September 9, a strain of the virus called Aichi from Japan, thought to be especially promising for vaccine development, was distributed to manufacturers and used to make a monovalent pandemic influenza vaccine. Again, the vaccine became widely available only after the pandemic's peak in January 1969 and was therefore of questionable value in preventing the spread. In 1976, the U.S. government made its first disastrous attempt to predict the emergence of a pandemic flu strain and to vaccinate every American before an outbreak was predicted to occur in the fall of 1976. In mid-January, several respiratory illnesses were reported among Army recruits at Fort Dix, New Jersey. On February 4th, a recruit at Fort Dix, Private David Lewis, left his sickbed to go on a 5-mile nighttime march, on which he collapsed and died. On February 1st, and then on February 10th, the New Jersey State Lab sent samples of isolates from throat swabs to the CDC. 2 contained an influenza A antigen. 4 contained what was interpreted as a swine flu-type hemagglutinin. Based on this flimsy and ambiguous evidence, the CDC claimed the virus was closely related to the Spanish flu virus, never mind that none of the other 200 soldiers who'd complained of flu-like symptoms at Fort Dix had confirmed this interpretation. According to official reports, Private Lewis's body was autopsied, and the pathologist discovered he was suffering from pneumonia with bloody mucus. However, we wonder if the immediate cause of death was a fatal cardiac event. The CDC's suggestion that the soldier had died of something akin to the 1918 Spanish flu sounded extremely scary, especially because, in 1976, everyone younger than 50 was presumed to be immunologically naive to it. On February 13th, CDC Director David Sensor finished writing a memo recommending mass immunization against this unusual flu strain found in the two soldiers before the flu season commenced in the fall. On February 19th, CDC Assistant Director for Programs, Bruce Dull, held a press conference on the flu outbreak at Fort Dix. Responding to questions from reporters, Dr. Dull mentioned that the strain was genetically related to the strain that purportedly caused the Spanish flu, which propagated widespread fear. An intriguing element of what came to be known as the swine flu affair is that a few days before the initial cases of flu were reported at Fort Dix, Dr. Dull submitted a memo to Health, Education, and Welfare, later split off into Health and Human Services, Secretary David Matthews, stating that liability issues could drive vaccine manufacturers out of business. Dull recommended that the secretary support legislation to grant manufacturers liability protection or to compensate all victims of vaccine injury. On March 15, 1976, President Gerald Ford was informed of the situation and was easily persuaded by CDC Director Sensor to support vaccinating all Americans against the predicted outbreak in the fall. On March 24th, President Ford made a national televised address announcing his support for the program. On March 30th, pharmaceutical industry spokesman C. Joseph Stettler testified to Congress that vaccine manufacturers were facing liability troubles, and he recommended that the government grant them indemnification. Indeed, as he explained, Merck Sharp and Dohme, Merrill, Wyeth, and Park Davis would be reluctant to sell their vaccines for the predicted autumn outbreak until they received full liability indemnity and a guaranteed profit. In other words, Big Pharma had Congress over the barrel. During the same session, Congress unanimously appropriated $135 million for a mass vaccination program. The only ranking scientist in the U.S. government who protested the vaccination of all Americans against a theoretical pandemic flu was an FDA virologist named Dr. J. Anthony Morris. As the New York Times put it in a subsequent review of the swine flu affair, Tony Morris, a PhD, is a vaccine specialist and he is especially knowledgeable about flu vaccine. He has worked productively and successfully for the government for most of his life, and he has been in trouble with the bureaucracy before for protesting rather insistently that there is no such thing as an effective flu shot, a judgment that could only bring unhappiness to the businesses that make flu vaccines and the doctors who inject them by the millions each year. Taking on the bureaucracy is, at best, risky. Tangling with an entire administration is an act of breathtaking nerve. In his zeal to alert the public last year, Morris had seminars on the NIH campus in Bethesda, Maryland, sent letters to newspapers and federal health officials, and talked to reporters. His message was that no evidence whatsoever existed that swine flu embodied the virulence of the 1918 pandemic, and that, in any event, the vaccine on hand was totally worthless. Most serious of all, it was certainly dangerous. Morris could not predict that it would paralyze and kill anybody, but he did know and warn that it could cause a hypersensitivity in some people that would trigger a whole range of grave illnesses. On July 12th, the FDA fired Morris, charging insubordination and incompetence. Morris then went public, claiming he was punished for his findings that influenza vaccines were neither safe nor effective. Neither the Ford administration nor Congress listened to him. With growing fears that an influenza pandemic of Spanish flu proportions would soon be upon the American people, Congress passed legislation on August 10th, granting four pharmaceutical companies liability protection and a profit guarantee. The drug companies began shipping vaccine in September, and the first shots were administered on September 23rd. In October, three people suffered fatal heart attacks after getting the shot at the same Pittsburgh clinic, which prompted an investigation and recall of the batch. Government investigators claimed the heart attacks were not caused by the vaccine. However, in an interview on the evening news, the renowned Allegheny County coroner, Dr. Cyril Wecht, expressed skepticism of this assurance, and he suggested the deaths may not have been coincidental. By October 14th, 33 deaths had been reported shortly after vaccination. On November 5th, Albert Sabin, inventor of the attenuated live virus polio vaccine, published a New York Times editorial, Washington and the Flu, in which he recommended stockpiling the vaccine while waiting to see if the predicted virulent swine flu pandemic emerged. As of early November, millions of Americans had not yet received the new shot, and still not a single case of the feared pandemic strain had been documented. Over the following month, cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome, GBS, among recently vaccinated patients were reported in 10 states. On December 16th, CDC Director David Sensor announced a one-month suspension of the vaccination program. The next day, the distinguished epidemiologist, William Fagy, estimated that the incidence of GBS was four times higher in vaccinated people than those who'd not yet received the vaccine. Because President Ford had lost the presidential election to Jimmy Carter in November, it was politically viable to blame the failed program on the Ford administration. The mass vaccination program was not reinstated, and on January 20, 1977, Joseph A. Califano Jr. was sworn in as Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare. On February 4th, CDC Director Sensor was given notice of his pending termination. With a flood of more than 4,000 legal claims for alleged damages from Guillain-Barré, the Department of Justice assigned 10 attorneys to defend the government, which had assumed liability for the shots. According to the government, taxpayer-funded settlements and judgments ultimately exceeded $100 million. However, in a 60 Minutes episode about the disaster that aired in November 1979, Mike Wallace reported that the government had concealed the true amount of the payout, which was $3.5 billion. Wallace also reported that the flu vaccine described in the consent form was not the strain contained in the influenza vaccine that most people received, which was called X53A. In his interview with Wallace, CDC Director Sensor stated he did not know if this vaccine had been tested. What precisely was the influenza strain that was used to make the 1976 swine flu vaccine? Most of the published literature refers to the strain as A/New Jersey/8/1976. H1N1. Was it isolated from the respiratory tract of the deceased Private Lewis? If so, what are we to make of the fact, noted in the official chronology of the affair, that the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare accused Park Davis of making and delivering millions of doses made from A. Shoup strain? The listener will recall that the virologist Richard Shoup isolated a strain of influenza A from sick pigs in the 1930s, which he concluded was closely related to the 1918 Spanish influenza strain that infected humans. However, research published in 2005 on the frozen remains of a 1918 flu victim who died in Teller Mission, Alaska, indicated that the pandemic virus contains genes derived from avian-like influenza virus strains, and that the 1918 virus is the common ancestor of human and classical swine H1N1 influenza viruses. In other words, CDC virologists didn't really know what they were dealing with. No one at the time understood the causative agent of the 1918 Spanish flu that was invoked to terrify the nation. Parke Davis apparently made a vaccine using a strain that Richard Shope isolated from pig nasal secretions in the 30s, and Director Censor didn't know if it was tested before it was injected into 45 million Americans. In the end, the only winners in the swine flu affair were the drug companies who delivered the vaccine. Having received liability protection and a guaranteed profit, they made millions from the pandemic that never was. The new HEW Secretary Califano commissioned Harvard professors Richard Neustadt and Harvey Fineberg to conduct a lessons-learned critical analysis of the swine flu pandemic response so that similar policy errors could be avoided in the future. In 1978, their paper titled The Swine Flu Affair, Decision-Making on a Slippery Disease, was published by the National Academies Press. In 1983, the same authors published a full-length book titled The Epidemic That Never Was, Policymaking and the Swine Flu Scare. The authors attributed the swine flu fiasco, as the New York Times characterized it, to the following mistakes. 1. Overconfidence by specialists in theories extrapolated from meager evidence. 2. Conviction amplified by pre-existing personal agendas. 3. Major decisions made prematurely before they were necessary. 4. Failure to address uncertainties in a way that allowed for subsequent reconsideration. 5. Insufficient questioning of scientific logic and of implementation prospects. Though Secretary Califano pushed back against the pandemic chicanery by commissioning Harvard professors Neustadt and Fineberg to write their critical review, this action proved to be a temporary setback for the pharmaceutical industry in its long march to capture federal public health agencies. Since the 1980s, the industry has largely succeeded in its ongoing campaign to eliminate independent critical scientists, such as Dr. J. Anthony Morris, from health agencies and to install industry friends, such as Dr. Bruce Dull.